A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you. Thank you for your support. Welcome to A Tempo, the Classical Network spotlight on the arts and culture. I'm Rachel Katz, and I'm your host as we explore the changes at work in the performing arts. Each week, I'll bring you some of the latest news and also take time to examine many of the issues that are challenging these organizations. We'll look at the impact of the economy, technology, and society on the arts, the importance of arts education, and how these organizations and ensembles are adjusting and innovating as they face the future. Today, we'll head to Maryland to hear what's in store for the upcoming season of the Maryland Lyric Opera. Founded in 2014, the Opera Company has been expanding the number of productions it stages and focusing on the development of young talent. I'll speak with music director Louis Salemno about Maryland Lyric Opera's goals and the highlights of this year's season. As part of A Tempo, we're pleased to bring you some of the news from around the world of the performing arts. The American Repertory Ballet has named Aidmara Cabrera as director of the Princeton Ballet School. Cabrera, who started in the position last month, is a former principal dancer of the National Ballet of Cuba and has been on the ballet school's faculty. She has also performed with Ballet Hispanico of New York and previously directed her own school in Miami. Following its one-day Women's Composers Initiative, the Philadelphia Orchestra announced it would commission works from all six of the composers who participated and named another woman to a two-year composer-in-residence program beginning next year. The orchestra plans to commission works from Melody Oethvers, Hilary Purrington, Chen-Wei Zhen, Robin Holcomb, Shi Wang, and Nina C. Young as it works to include more works by women in its regular seasons. The one-day showcase held this week was co-sponsored by the American Composers Orchestra and offered the six composers an opportunity to have their works rehearsed and recorded by the orchestra. As part of its diversity initiative, the orchestra said more than half of the subscription programs in the 2019-2020 season will include works composed by women, including a number of commissions. Gabriela Elena Frank, who composed a piece that the orchestra performed in honor of Yannick Nézet-Séguin's first season as music director, will serve as composer-in-residence for two seasons, beginning in the 2019-2020 season. During her tenure, she will compose a work for the orchestra and be involved in its efforts to collaborate with community partners on programs highlighting social change. In addition, the orchestra will provide opportunities to connect emerging women composers with mentors. Italian conductor Claudio Simone passed away September 6th. Critic and commentator Norman Lebrecht reported on his blog The Slip Disc that Simone died at his home in Padua. Founder of the ensemble I Solisti Veneti, Simone was credited with bringing Vivaldi's operas to broader attention and with reviving several Rossini operas for modern audiences. Simone was 86. Those are just some of the headlines this week from around the arts world. Maryland Lyric Opera is gearing up to launch its 2018-2019 season this month, which includes bringing its first fully staged production since the organization started up in 2014. The season starts off September 14th and 15th at North Bethesda's Music Center at Strathmore with a concert version of La Fanciulla del West, but then will perform a full production of Lucia de Lammermoor come January in College Park. Together with an expanding Young Artist Institute, the full-scale performance is part of Maryland Lyric Opera's efforts to bring opera to its community and provide opportunities to talented young singers seeking to move their careers forward. During this year's season, Maryland Lyric Opera will also hold two concerts featuring the music of Verdi and Puccini and hold two intensive sessions of its Young Artist Institute in Maryland and a training session and competition in China, seeking to tap that musical market for talent. The Opera Company first announced plans to offer fully staged productions last year, when it also named Louis Salemno as music director. I recently spoke with Salemno, who previously was resident coach for Washington National Opera's Domingo Kayfert's Young Artist Program, about these initiatives, the mission of Maryland Lyric Opera, and his own thoughts about the present and future of opera.
I was born in Philadelphia. I was trained in the public schools. When I was 15, I was sent to Paris to study, but in those years, in the 50s and the 60s, classical music was very much more at the center of middle-class American life. We had Van Cliburn, we had Beverly Sills, you had Roberta Peterson, Johnny Carson. The students in the Philadelphia schools, and I was one of them, when I was in junior high school, we were taken to hear the Philadelphia Orchestra four times a year. Now, I've noticed that things are a little different. Classical music, I'm worried about it. Opera, we're still, I think, we have a visual aspect to our, you know, to our performances. With the advent of the computer in the last 10 years or whatever, you know, everybody got involved in looking at screens. When I was working at the Portland Opera, whereas we tried to interest all the people, and we had no success because they wanted to stay home and watch the screens. They didn't want to come to hear live performances, and I worry about that when I attend subscription concerts in my travels. My habit is to, you know, arrive to conduct an opera, and the first week I prepare the singers. The orchestra, the Milwaukee Symphony, or the Montreal Symphony, or the Dallas, they're playing subscription concerts before I meet them. And as a habit, I attend those concerts just to, you know, just sometimes out of curiosity, sometimes when I'm returning to see my old friends again, but there are too many empty seats everywhere.
Well, with that in mind, you joined Maryland Lyric Opera after several years after its founding, but going back and looking at the origins of Maryland Lyric Opera, what are the guiding principles behind Maryland Lyric Opera?
It was founded 5 years ago by Brad Clark. He is our founder and artistic director, and he wanted to provide an opportunity, number one, to employ musicians. He's especially interested in developing young singers, and he wanted to have a clear focus on education. So when I was brought into the picture, we looked at how we were going to develop our singers and what we were going to focus on. And the intention was, we're going to find the greatest singers with the most potential. We started looking nationally, and then we started looking internationally. We would bring them to Bethesda for a period of 3 weeks, train them in the essentials, singing and acting, and then produce operas that would feature the people that we trained. That was the goal when I signed on, and we were also going to start producing operas again. What happened this first year, we were very, very lucky in that every time we wanted to bring an artist or a teacher or a singer to Bethesda, they happened to be available when we needed them. So we brought the finest assistant conductor from Brazil. He was available for 12 weeks. The gold standard of vocal teaching is a man by the name of William Stone, who teaches at the Academy of Vocal Arts in Philadelphia and Curtis. He was available. So with those two colleagues, we put the word out. We were looking for singers, and we decided to try to help as much as we could. We have no application fees. We have no requirements that they submit audio or visual materials. We accept the resume, and we guarantee them an audition. So we rent the hall and we provide the pianos. We're trying to make it as easy as possible for the people who have real talent who want to come. And we had 600 applicants because the institute that we have is tuition free. And we help with housing and we help with travel. So we're trying to find the singers with the most potential, develop them, and put them on the stage. And we were thrilled with the quality of the singers that we found this year. And when it came time to look even a little more internationally for tenors, we went to Beijing, and we found four spectacular tenors. We invited seven Chinese artists. There's two sopranos, a baritone, a mezzo, and four tenors. And they came periodically. So based on all those results, we decided to move forward next season and produce 13 different performances in four different venues.
Well, looking at, first of all, the Young Artist Institute specifically, so give us a little more detail, if you could. What do the participants experience during that period of time, during the Institute?
We only take six singers, and they have a voice lesson every day, a coaching with two coachings with my assistants, and a coaching with me. And the course of study in those 3 weeks is specifically tailored to their needs, their specific needs. And at the end of the 3 weeks, they present a concert or recital. but they get individual attention and a lot of it daily. They come from situations in the conservatories where they have a lesson once a week and then another week and another week. We're doing it very intensively here. So we're focusing on the essentials, the singing and the languages. Our opera singers have to sing a lot in Italian, then French, and sometimes they sing in German.
And what was it specific about China that made that an attractive place to reach out to and bring into the sphere of your reach?
That's an interesting story. I worked for 10 years at the Domingo Kafer's Young Artist Program of the Washington National Opera. And about 5 years ago, we had two Chinese artists, a tenor and a bass, Mr. Lee and Mr. Wu. Those gentlemen are both now living in the United States with green cards. They're working at the Metropolitan Opera, and they have continued to coach with me after they finished at the Washington Opera. Mr. Lee and Mr. Wu are both involved in the Institute and feature in our programming next year. In the winter, I was standing in the parking lot outside the rehearsal space, and Mr. Lee happened upon me getting ready for his rehearsal. He said, "How are you?" I said, "I'm fine. We can't find tenors. We need tenors." And he said, "We have tenors in China." I said, "Yeah, fine, whatever." The next day, same parking lot, same time, I'm standing there. He arrives for his lesson. I said, "What kind of tenors you got in China?" He said, "We have great tenors." I said, "Better than you?" He said, "Yes, better than me." I said, "Well, whatever." And then a couple of days later, same routine, before his rehearsal, I was there. I said, I discussed this with my boss and my colleagues, and we're wondering if we can make this work. We want to go to China in the next 3 weeks. He said, "Fine." So he organized the competition, and 70 singers applied, and he went to China, heard the 70, reduced them to 20. I went in January and picked 7 out of the 20. And I used this. It's an interesting way, because the Maryland Lyric Opera, very small company. So an idea comes to me, I discuss it with the general manager and the artistic director, and the three of us can communicate easily and quickly. A decision is made and we move. Unlike some other companies that are much bigger and the ideas have to be passed from one end of the building to the other, and then they're spoken about and refined. And so I like how agile we are when we get a good idea and how fast. And this was very successful, this trip to Beijing. I am going back in September for 10 days with my artistic director, and we're going to 4 cities in 10 days. We start in Beijing or we wind up in Beijing. We do Beijing, Shanghai, Shandong, and Beijing again. And we're also intending to go to South America this year, Santiago, to look for singers in Brazil and Chile and that area. And then we're planning in February to go to Valencia in Spain to look for some European singers, and then Belgrade the following season to look for the Eastern European singers.
Well, when the opera company was reorganized and kind of refocused back in 2014 when you were brought in, part of that did include a greater focus on the institutes, the Young Artists Institute. Why is that such an important part of the goal of Lyric Opera?
Our ultimate goal is to have a regional company, a good, solid regional company that presents 4 or 5 operas every year. But we do not intend to cast famous people. We are looking to have casts of people on the verge of stardom. And we want to help to develop them. Because we want to connect their training, their development, their preparation, and then we will choose the proper repertory that exploits their talents. That's what the goals match, you know, our long range. We're not looking to make an opera company that hires the most famous singers. We're looking to hire an opera company that hires young singers on the verge of stardom.
Well, as you pointed out, with the pipeline that you've started to create, you're able to expand the number of fully staged operas. Tell us a little bit about this upcoming season and what you see as the highlights of it.
This is fantastic. We have 13 performances, and they're all with orchestra in 3 different venues. We start out at Strathmore, which is the Performing Arts Center. A hall that seats 1,800. And we are doing two performances of Fanciulla del West in concert by Puccini. And there are 18 people in that cast. The leading lady, the leading man, and the leading villain are double cast. And we, in a larger space, we have an orchestra of 78 people. We formed the Maryland Lyric Opera Orchestra this year and chorus. And we made a decision in a bigger hall to move up in the casting. So the leading lady, for example, has sung in the Ring in the last two performances of The Ring of Covent Garden. She's an English soprano who made her American debut with me in Portland singing Tosca. And then we have, singers very close to them in achievement and experience. Then from that big thing, in October, we moved to a church where we're used to working, seats 300, and with an orchestra of 25 people, there will be excerpts from Magic Flute and The Abduction from the Seraglio by Mozart. They'll be semi-staged. And then we move to the K Theater in January to a fully staged production of Lucia di Lammermoor of Donizetti, double cast. And then we go back to the church to do, with the orchestra of 25, to do excerpts from the Da Ponte Mozart cycle, Don Giovanni, The Marriage of Figaro, Così fan tutte. Then we finish at the K. Back to the orchestra goes on stage, there'll be 50 people. And we do one night Verdi excerpts and one night Puccini excerpts. So I'm delighted at this kind of growth. And when you look at, if you look at our press release, it shows all of the casting of all of the performances. There are little stars and little circles and little asterisks next to many, many, many of the names. And that means they are, an alumnus of the Maryland Lyric Opera Institute, or they are from Domingo Caifert's Young Artist Program at the Washington National Opera, where I taught for 10 years, or they are winners of the competition in Beijing, or they are winners of the competition the Maryland Lyric Opera had a couple years ago here. I love it when I see all these people that we have trained, that we have worked with, and they're all in the cast of our operas for the most part.
Well, another aspect of that is, certainly any opera company, particularly a new opera company, needs to develop its audience. What have you seen in the last few years in terms of who is in the seats watching these performances?
Mostly seniors. I was a freelance opera conductor for many years, and I had a habit of, you have to rehearse for 3 weeks in opera minimum. And the first week, it's just the singers. And my habit was to find a restaurant close, and I would sit at the bar and read the New York Times and eat my lunch by myself, just to get a little distance from the rehearsals. And every day I would go to the same place. At the end of the week, the waiters and the waitresses say, "Hey, wait a minute, who are you? What are you doing here?" And I say, "I'm here to conduct the opera." And they go, "What opera?" I go, "Your opera, doing Madame Butterfly at Vancouver," I was, or wherever I was. It sounded like Vancouver and Abbott. And then they get to know me, and I get them free passes to the dress rehearsal, and I make them promise to stay for the whole thing. I tell them, you don't have to like it, but you have to watch the whole thing. And afterwards, you have to tell me what you think about it. These are all people in their 20s. They're all actors and actresses out of work, beautiful young people, and they're working as waiters and waitresses. So they get dressed up. They go to dinner. They go to the opera. The next day, they're all over me saying it's the best thing they ever saw. I said, "Well, you can, will you go next year? You got to buy tickets. This is your opera." But these are people that would never think of even going near the opera house. They don't even know it's there. So I feel that we have to make more of an effort. I worked at the beginning of my career in Houston and Dallas. And those two towns in the 80s were very, very aggressive by making performances for students. They would bring the students to the opera house. They brought 12,000 fifth graders in the Dallas-Fort Worth area to hear performances of an opera, 2 hours of an opera with the Dallas Symphony in the pit. You give them the whole thing. You don't water it down. So I thought in the South, when I was at least in Texas, the efforts to develop these audiences in the future were very aggressive and very, I participate in a lot of them. I wasn't taken to see the opera when I was growing up. I was taken to hear the orchestra. So any effort that we can make to reach a younger audience, I'm all for. But sometimes you can't. Sometimes they just don't want to come to the opera house, or they don't think about it. Sometimes we have to go to them. I love that. Go to where the people are, because the great operas that we play, you don't need the marble palaces. You don't need the opera house. The great operas communicate to everybody, even in a shopping mall, you know.
And what are some of the ways that Maryland Lyric Opera is reaching out to the community and bringing opera to different places and different people?
We're in, you know, three different venues, and we have depending on the venue, the price of the tickets change. So that when we have, you know, we want to make opera accessible. When we're playing the K Theater, which is a small horseshoe-shaped opera house, 600 seats. We were hoping that it makes very, very low prices, and we play in a church very low so that everything becomes affordable. We want to play the sold-out houses, and we want everybody to come to the opera, and we want low prices. That is our philosophy, and I'm wondering, you know, if we can make... I think music is one of the greatest things in life. I think it's one of the finest things. It enhances our life. We need it. We turn to our composers and our novelists and our poets to help us express ourselves. So when I'm very moved, I'm speechless. I think music is vital. Music can enhance the quality of everybody's life, and I just think I want to make it as accessible as we can in any way that we can.
Mm. So what are some of the things then that, given your vast experience, what are some of the things that you felt you could bring and add and, you know, help move this project forward?
I began my career in opera in 1975 at the age of 23 in Barcelona. And I've been ever since doing it. I celebrated 40 years. And, you know, in 2015, I was working at the Domingo Cabrits, and the kids made a party for me to celebrate 40 years. I've conducted opera. I've worked in opera on four different continents. I was a guest conductor mostly. And I believe that opera is a musical form. And I believe that you have three elements in an opera. One is the music, second is the story, and the third is the visual, you know, what you see on the stage with the acting. And I believe that your most successful performances, when you really communicate what you're trying to say to the public, are when those elements match and blend. So that's in my experience. Opera that, you know, and I worked at the San Francisco operas in the 70s, and I really haven't seen it any better since then. What they were doing in San Francisco in the 70s, they had the greatest singers in the world with the greatest conductors in the world and the greatest stage directors in the world. And there weren't modern productions, they were classical productions, you know. So in those years, they did not change the epic of the opera. They did not change the locale of the opera. They did not move it into the future. They didn't put people in blue jeans, you know, or put them on the moon, or, you know. And that was, in my experience, some of the finest, most satisfying performances I've ever seen. And the public responded overwhelmingly. We couldn't even send in our assistants to watch a performance. You know, everything was sold out, sold out, sold out, sold out. But that collection of music, drama, and theater, it was in those years in the 70s, to me was, and I think that's what I try to bring. I think I'm a basically good opera conductor because of my travels. I started in Barcelona, I went to San Francisco, I went to Chicago, I went to La Scala in the 5 years of my apprenticeship, and then after 5 years, I started conducting as a conductor in Houston. But it's a big international form opera. It's big. It's big, and we learn from each other when we travel. There's some things the Europeans do better. Some things they do better in San Francisco. Some things they do in Chicago really fine. Some things in Houston they do really well. So the more I travel, I felt the more I got to learn different approaches and different ways of doing opera. So when I'm in the third act of my career. This opportunity came to me as a surprise. I have been working for 10 years with the young conductors and the young singers and the young pianists at the Washington Opera, and I really liked it. I like that work. These were people from all over the world that the Bingo came for young artists. It came from many different countries, and they're all in their late 20s. They have all their advanced degrees, and these are the people that would take on the edge of stardom, and I loved working one-on-one with those kids. I found it very invigorating and very, very, very rewarding. And I never did a lot of teaching in my career. I conducted operas for 40 years before I came to stay at the Washington. And I expected that that would continue, but my colleagues at the Maryland Lyric Opera heard about me, and they asked to take me to lunch, and they asked me to meet with them, and they wanted to explore. They wanted to get to know me a little bit. They wanted to tell me what they were looking for, what directions they wanted to go, and it turns out to be the most exciting job I've ever had. I always wonder, you know, you never know the turns in life are going to take. But this job came along. Again, I thought I was, towards the middle or the end of the third act of my life, and I feel like the third act is just beginning. I have a chance to develop an opera company from every aspect of it that a lot of conductors don't have anymore. In the old days, the conductors were more involved in every aspect of opera production. The conductors were involved in the choice of the opera, what we're going to produce, how we're going to produce it, who's going to direct, who's going to sing, who's going to get, you know. And that's not easy. That's very, very difficult administrative work, grinds away. It's not even the singers you want are not available. The orchestra's going to strike. Personnel, the box office is down. You know, that kind of work is very, very hard. But the conductor's work is the center of those planning meetings. Then they invented the airplane. The conductor's job, but the conductor lives to conduct an opera. When you talk to a conductor after you conduct an opera, you think you're dying and going to heaven. So you don't want to go back to the office. So they could conduct the opera and go to the airport and conduct another opera, conduct another with that. So the conductors for the last 20, the stage directors have moved into these positions of what we produce and how we produce and who's it going to sing. So the conductors don't get to participate that much anymore. And for me, what this is an opportunity to look a little in our past and how we used to do things. I feel that all of my thoughts about what we present and how we are not only welcome, but they're solicited and acted upon.
That was Louis Salemno, music director of Maryland Lyric Opera. The season begins September 14th with a concert production of Puccini's La Fanciulla del West. More information on this season's productions and the Young Artist Institute can be found at mdlo.org. I hope you enjoy these conversations that I bring you on A Tempo each week, focusing on the changing dynamics and challenges in the arts world. But remember that programs like this are made possible only through your support of this station. To become a member of the Classical Network, go to wwfm.org and click on Donate. Thank you for being a member of the global listening community that is the Classical Network. Thank you for listening to A Tempo. I'm your host and producer, Rachel Katz. Join me again next week as we explore more issues and trends in the world of the performing arts. You can listen to past programs of A Tempo by going to our arts and cultural news page at wwfm.org or searching for A Tempo on our program page. A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you.